Today we're not going to be talking about a specific roster, but I am joined by Norbert Brunhuber. How am I supposed to pronounce that last name, by the way? I've never
You did it brilliantly.
Okay.
Rock on.
Yeah.
Rock on with
you. I'm always a little bit iffy on my Nordic vowel sounds, because there's a lot of weird history like that. I was reading the other day that apparently Aegis, or it started as ah, like the AE sound. It was an ah, and then it became E, and then now everyone says A, at least in the English-speaking world.
Right.
So,
That reminds me of when Monty Python was saying that you used to pronounce the word knight, as in like a mounted knight, as Knigget.
Yeah. Or like ye, the Y used to be a TH sound, so it was still the, but everyone thinks it was saying ye old, like potion shop or whatever.
Amazing.
There's a lot of weird morphing of European sounds over the years. But that's not why I have you on. Enough of my weird-ass tangent here. Norbert, I brought you on because you are one of the premier TOs in the wargaming scene, in my opinion. Like I fawningly said on Jacob's roundtable retrospective he did a little while ago, I consider you part of the Mount Rushmore of War Machine organizing between you, Will Rutan, Tyson Koch, and Dave Carl, the War Machine Weekend head. I'm sure there's a lot of other great regional organizers out there, but those were the four that I was most aware of. You guys were at the top of your game running the biggest events. You were a big part of WTC, from my understanding. I don't know if that was for the entire breadth of it or just the era that I was involved with, but you were a very visible face in the community working on that.
Yeah, you're very kind, Mark. Thank you so much for mentioning me in that august company. I know those guys. That is amazing to be even counted amongst them. I still remember meeting Tyson for the first time. I believe it was at Kingdom Con, if you recall that convention in San Diego.
R.I.P.
Excellent con. I think I don't know how long he was into the game, but I met him for the first time there, and he was such a classy guy. And then he just completely, I moved and ended up moving away because I was on the East Coast at the time. But so I never made it back, but he just helped make that scene blow up on the West Coast. And he's still doing so, which is great.
Yeah. And he's tangentially involved with MCP. He's been running MCP side events at LV. He ran it last year. He was going to run it again this year until it got canceled. I assume most conventions he's at, he's willing to host an MCP side event. And if it pops off, we might even see him full on convert. But we'll see how that goes.
I didn't know that. That is great news. Great news indeed.
Yeah. But I guess to bring this back to the reason I have you on for a very special episode today, we wanted to promote the Santa Claus Clash on the 19th, which is a one-day tournament on the Tabletop Simulator Discord. We really want to get people involved with our competitive scene, push up the numbers. For our last league, we had 144 people start it. Drops over the course, of course, but I think we've got a very vibrant and healthy community, and we're trying to grow it with outreach here.
Yeah, definitely. And we don't want to scare off anyone. This episode's going to cover aspects of casual gaming, and it's going to cover aspects of crunchy competitive gaming. So if you're listening, stop. Don't hit the pause button. We've got something for you.
Yeah, I think this is going to be generically useful for anybody who wants to try and run events in their community, whether they be tournaments, whether they be leagues, whether they be casual, whether they be serious. And I think we're going to try and cover a bit of all of that and how we have been approaching adminning events in the Tabletop Simulator Discord.
Yep, indeed. Yeah, and we're going to get to how you're involved in that as well.
Yeah, so where did you get your start in wargaming? I know where you kind of ended up in the WTC stuff, but where did you start off? 40K like everyone else?
No, as a matter of fact. Role-playing was my first, when I was a little kid playing. That's how I got started in the geek hobby. But my start in miniature wargaming was actually historicals, because I was a big history buff, ancient history buff.
Oh, that's hardcore, and like Saga and stuff?
I played, my favorite was Alexander the Great era, and just after. But I also did some Romans stuff and some World War II type stuff. And loved it. For it was really a lot of fun because, like I said, you could bring the history to life, so to speak, by seeing the, some of the difficulties that the generals face when you're actually trying to push the models around on the table. So I did that for about 10 years. And then I was getting a little bored of it.
Holy moly.
Yeah, 10 years of... you're gonna yeah, I know, we talked about age earlier on a different chat and it's gonna become really apparent now because I did that for 10 years and then I was getting a little tired of it and wanted something a little bit more competitive. And my friends in New Jersey, Tom Hoffman and Michael Stubbs, they got into Mark I War Machine. So this was in 2007, I think. And they got really hyped on it and invited me down for a demo. I took the demo and the mechanics just blew me away, not to mention the cool steampunky models. So I played since 2007 Mark I. So that was about the time, I think Stampede was the book that just came out, which was introducing cavalry models to the game for the first time. And Hordes had just released. So... yep, did that then. So dropped everything, just did that. Played it all the way through Mark II, played it into Mark III, until today, really, until Marvel Crisis Protocol came out and then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And on WTC side, yeah, I've been running stuff. So I became a press ganger very soon after starting Mark I. So I think in 2009, me and Stubbs, Stubbs was a press ganger and then I became one. Mm-hmm. And so we ran stuff together. And then I moved to England in 2012 into London. And I was lucky enough to be part of a group of people who wanted to bring the team tournament experience into War Machine based on a Warhammer model. And so I helped develop the draft of the rules for that and kind of introducing that to the community, and then was on the committee and the head judge for 8 years that we've done it? 7 years? Gosh.
That sounds right-ish. I know it predates my time in War Machine. I didn't start War Machine until 2015. I played for a month back in the 2007, just after Hordes era.
But, okay.
Sorsha was so busted that none of my high school friends would play with me. And since I didn't have a car and couldn't reliably go to the game store to play other people, I just straight up quit the game because all my friends were like, Sorsha's busted. This is bullshit. We're not playing this game.
I can understand that. Yeah.
By and large, your entire WTC history predates me. I know it goes back to 2012 or 2011, right?
2012, I came to England and I got involved when that's where we started formulating it in the fall. But I think the first one was 2013.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right. And I mean, it's been a huge institution ever since. I mean, it's been running every year. I think they did an online version this year because of COVID.
That's right. Yeah,
I know there was talk that at least Guild Ball was going to do in person, but I think they eventually gave up.
Yes, they did, unfortunately. Yep, we did it, and it was entirely community driven, and very robustly held. We held ourselves to the highest standards of wargaming, both in terms of sportsmanship and the way we conducted the event, and also the way we refereed the event on site. And because of that, and we also were very rigorous, thanks to Peter Gaublum, a guy in Belgium. He was collecting all the data. We collected all the list data and published it, and then collected all the results data and published that. And so it became big, unique point, even though it was a team event as opposed to individuals, a singles tournament, which complicated interpretation. It still contributed a massive amount of data every year about the state of the game. And so fueled quite a bit of the community's discussion and podcasters' content, which I was very happy about.
Yep, I remember my single biggest controversy. I don't remember if it was off of WTC stats, but for those of you who aren't familiar with my War Machine history, I used to be a podcaster in my War Machine time around 2017 to 2019 is the rough range. But I remember getting in a huge fight with people because I said that the numbers showed that Kador was quite probably the worst faction in the game, and people did not like that.
It's like you're calling their baby ugly. You know how it is.
Yeah, it was always kind of tricky because Privateer Press like actively discouraged collecting stats. I think they loosened over the years, but even with the data that tournaments were collecting, it was like kind of hard to get like a proper full picture out of data. Yeah. But I mean, you guys were definitely one of the driving forces in resisting Privateer Press's attempt to get nobody to talk about the state of the game, as it seems. So big props for that.
Well, I don't know about that, but it was really good. I thought it was quite useful and interesting. And I think it only helped to improve things, honestly.
Yeah. No, I think it allowed for a much healthier conversation around certain outliers. Once you start seeing certain factions like pushing 60% win rate, you know there's a problem. And then people start talking about how it's a problem, and eventually the devs start listening.
We hope.
Yeah, so you've kind of run the gamut from like peer player to small local organizer to organizing one of the biggest wargaming events out there. Is there a particular level of play that you prefer? Do you enjoy the small 16-man store events, or are you all in on the big convention experience?
I love every aspect of the wargaming thing. I like introducing the game to new people. I like running the small events with the people that are kind of see each other regularly. I dearly love going to regional conventions. I really love conventions and the travel aspect of it. And the massive, nothing made me more proud with the team of people that were with me, of course, than running these massive international events. When you have people from the United States and Australia and China and Malta coming because you've invited them and putting some serious cash behind those invites, on their part, it's really humbling and also makes you quite proud when you can pull it off. And all that mattered to me is seeing people happy, and having a good time. That is such a major reward. And you do that off of the back of running solid events so that people feel like they're getting their money's worth out of it. And you can't go wrong.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the WTC, legendary. It's probably, I'm trying to gauge whether I would put War Machine Weekend above or below WTC. Probably WTC is actually the premier event. I know before I left War Machine, I was like trying to get a US-centric team event circuit going at cons. Because I wanted to have something to rival the WTC because it was so awesome, but it's so hard to get there as a US player because you need to be one of the top 15 players in the country and then like pay for all the travel and like deal with all that.
I have to say though, War Machine Weekend is, yeah, I mean, and I think it's really, it's unfair to compare to other events only because it had such an international aspect to it.
That was a huge part of the draw.
That was, yeah. Yeah, that and being completely sequestered away in, for 3 days with fellow geeks. The drinking stories are just legendary. They're because it's in Europe, and so
Corey Doyle playing with his clothes off, all kinds of wild shit.
Which countries were you in when you came?
I never went. I coached USA Red in 2017. I did all their draft prep, and I remember Brandon Andrews calls me at like 3 a.m. my time because they're about to go into a match with like Greece or something, and they wanted like some last minute like clarification on draft priorities.
Amazing.
It's probably one of my great regrets of my War Machine career is never being able to actually go. I think I only had one good year where the resume was good enough, but it's a tricky thing to get into.
Yes, definitely. Which, adds the attraction as well.
Though, bending this back towards MCP, I would love to see MCP in the WTC one day.
Oh, yeah. There are things afoot. There are things afoot, Mark. When we get towards the end of the cast, I'm gonna tell you about some things that we're trying to work out that you don't know about just yet, are also very, very early, very early.
Okay, I want to fast forward to that shit now.
All right, go ahead. Let's keep going, though.
But back to MCP. Where did you dip your toe in? I remember in the early days of late 2019, Sung-Soo from Across the Bifrost mentioned that you were getting into the game, and I was like, oh shit, MCP probably has legs then. I think I should really pull, because I think I bought the core set and I was screwing around, but as soon as I heard you were starting to play, I was like, oh, this might be a real thing, because you're one of the biggest TO names, and when you start playing, that means there's going to be good events at least in Europe. So what drew you into the game?
I have to tell you, I was completely against the game when I first heard about it. not against, but uninterested. Let's say that, uninterested. Because I like superhero stuff. I used to collect comic books when I was in college and in graduate school, and watched all the films naturally, but not a big nerd about it right now. And furthermore, I'm used to War Machine, which I love the army aspect of it. And these were five models on the table. And I'm like, well, how interesting can that be? Anyway, so I kind of dismissed it basically from the Gen Con things. But luckily, a couple of guys here, notably Pat Dunford, were following along with it. And so just like how I got started in War Machine, I had some people who I respected following along and saying, this has got some mechanics that are quite interesting. And that's what's going to attract me. I mean, as much as I'm not trying to knock GW, but the models are great. And I'm like, that'd be really cool to try. And then I read the rules or I watch a demo, playthrough on YouTube. And I'm like, oh God, that's just not for me, Pat kept on me. So it came out in November. End of November, and so first week of December, I'll never forget it. Actually, I was at our usual pub where we had our club, and we were going to meet there, but the pub double booked us, and so they were kicking us out basically for some other group. And I was like, "Damn!" So I told Pat on the phone because he was still to get there, and he's like, "Well, what do you want to do?" I'm like, "Well, I came all this way. There's the game shop that's a couple blocks down from where I was." I said, "You want to try to see if we can get a table there?" And he said, "Sure." So I luckily get a table, which is not always possible. So I actually almost didn't get this demo, which probably tells you something about fate. Yeah. And Pat gave me the demo, and I'm playing this game, and I'm like, "Damn, these models, they're kind of just like the way they behave in the movies, which is, and I only say movies instead of comic books just because movies really show off the live action aspect of characters, and it really felt like I was playing these characters, like they were like their essence, and the mechanics were deep, and I had no real idea yet about, list building and all that kind of jazz, which is just icing on the cake. But I said, this is different. So after that, I started reading into it more heavily, started looking at it, and went ahead and bought a core box very shortly thereafter. And the rest was history, because the game just proved itself. We went to a couple of nights. We would have a regular game night that we played. It got deeper and deeper. One of the guys actually ran intro, I don't know what they call them, crisis event, where kind of show up and play. It was, yeah. So we did that for one day, and that was it. Then I was hooked for it. And so I wanted to do it because I wanted to make sure, just like a War Machine, the reason I got into organizing was I wanted to make sure the community grew enough so I could always have a game and I could see my friends and we'd have a good time. And so when nothing else was looking like it was going to pick up that role, because I didn't want to just step on people's toes, I just started doing it. And it's just kind of cascaded from there. The damn pandemic hit, and then again a bunch of nerdy friends, the same group that I was playing live with in London, mentioned just casually about Tabletop Simulator, and I was like, how good could that be? and then the pandemic's kind of dragging on, and I was like, well, I want to get some games in, so let me get this. And so I bought it. And the mod was, even back then, even though it wasn't at the amazing rate of maturity it is now, it still was really smooth, relatively speaking. And so I was like, this is good. I could see this playing a game with this. And so that's how I got rolling on the tabletop simulator. I still used to do live stuff. We squeezed in three pretty large events in London in between lockdowns and things over the course of the year.
Yeah, because the UK's had removal of lockdown a couple of times, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
I don't think my county has any
rules.
Yeah.
So we played it that way and complemented it with tabletop simulator, and it just blossomed from there because of just how quickly this is growing, how deep the game is, and a real international presence. If anything, even though COVID stopped us from going live and that kind of stalled the games in some respects, from my perspective, the tabletop simulator option has grown the international aspect of the game far faster than, and interconnectedness with between countries far faster than I think it would have under organic circumstances.
Yeah, easier pickup games, etc. Actually, I've got a funny anecdote. I reached out to Jaborf to interview him for Roster Doctor because he had done well in the East bracket. I had no clue he was Spanish. we talked back and forth about maybe trying to do a Spanish episode of Roster Doctor, but I was I was too afraid at how bad my Spanish is. I have not practiced it in like a decade, and I still get the grammar, but if I forget a word, I just totally lock up. It would have been a terrible episode. Maybe we'll do a written version with him at one point. But
a blog post. You're doing blogs now. I think a blog would be awesome in Spanish. Yeah.
That way I can at least clean up my poor Spanish on the fly in post. But yeah, so...
So yeah, we started...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I was going to say, as far as I know, we started doing admin work for the Tabletop Simulator Discord around the same time, right? If I recall correctly, Gronko put out the call to find people to help with the Season 3 League, and I signed up. I don't know if you were on board with them before that or not.
So, yeah, it was very similar to how I got involved with just running stuff at conventions and things. I got into TTS at the tail end of Season 1 of the League. And it was funny because the map used to change on us every week. And we're like, what's going on with this mod? Like, why is the map always different? And we had no idea there was a league going on and that you guys would, you know, auto-set the map to the week's map. So we got that. I wasn't even on Discord. So then I finally figured out that there's a Discord thing going on. Anyhow, we got enough games in our belt that we felt super ready when Season 2 got launched that we would play in Season 2. So we played in Season 2. It had its hiccups. It grew massively, which is partly why. And there's like only one guy running it, Dizzard, maybe Gronko helping him. I said to myself, I said, I want this to grow. I want this to be smoother. There's no way that these guys couldn't use a bit of help to help make this smoother. So I got a hold of them. I just went in and volunteered, and not volunteered, but, you know, contacted them. I said, look, I've been doing this for War Machines, blah, blah, blah. And can I help you? I'd really like to help you do this. So they got me involved in the league in the Discord channel for organizers. And that's when we started planning out already Season 3 a little bit and doing lessons learned and trying to, you know, from my player perspective, how I felt it was. You know, it was really valuable for them to hear that, and we organized it. And that's when we came up with the idea of doing different brackets by time zones rather than by country.
Yep.
And then is when I realized that we really need somebody on the West Coast, because I'm a big believer that the person should be from that community and understand the people from there, and not to mention be in the same time zone. And so that's when we put the call out for somebody in the West time zone. And when you immediately volunteered, I said, oh, I know this guy. I can vouch for him. He's a solid community organizer. And you were in without any problems, thankfully.
Yeah, well, thank you for the vote of confidence. But yeah, season three went mostly well. We had the 144 players to start. We went through top 16, so I think we played a full 10 weeks of a league.
Correct.
And I just wanted to take this time to kind of do a bit of a retrospective because I think we found some things that worked, some things we didn't. We've communicated a lot of this to the tabletop simulator community already in some of our retrospectives with the polls and stuff, but I thought it would be nice to just go through it in a bit of a podcast format. I
Sure.
think the time zone stuff was a massive success. The naming was a bit off, so we called them West, Central, and East, which caused some confusion because Central was really Eastern Standard Time and East was Greenwich Mean Time.
Yes.
And so I mean, that's a really easy fix. I think the other thing that we learned, what the big thing was, that margin of victory really should be after strength of schedule. I was
That
kind of
was a deliberate.
ambivalent. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, it was a deliberate choice, so everybody knows. We had played it the other way around in season two. We did want to try it in season three, primarily because it's used in other game systems, and also because how this game is scored as a difference in points at some level. So I thought maybe it'd be more reflective of the philosophy of the game, but it just led to abuse essentially. People were either having to grind out points against some poor sod who's already lost, or else people would be gaming the system to try to get a certain margin of victory, to get better standings and things like that.
Yeah, I think it would have been a lot less fragile if it weren't for concessions. So online leagues, by necessity, because people are just going to have life happen and they have to drop out, are going to lead to concessions and drops. But we define it doesn't matter what we define a drop or a concession to be. We treated it as a 6-0 victory, or if it was a mid-match forfeit, you just immediately give 6 points to your opponent. But it turns out that that's not always the optimal case. And we actually had somebody who realized their opponent was going to forfeit and like bent over backwards to play against them so that they could try and farm points to make the top cut. And so, while I think that a margin of victory as the first tiebreak might have been fine in an in-person event where you aren't going to see behavior like this, I think by the necessity of the online event, we just need to go back to strength of schedule.
And speaking of that, the other thing that we learned was we were trying to use challenge.com as the scorekeeping
Oh, yeah.
tool,
I almost
which
rage quit adminning the league over that because, for those of you who don't know, Challenge has no way to fix matches once they're given. You have to. Oh, and you can't undo the matches for the current round. You literally have to delete the whole tournament and start from scratch.
Yeah, it was
So I
crazy.
had to do that like two or three times with like 60-person tournaments. And like it literally
And
took
the
half an hour.
adware, the
Ugh.
horrific ad, it was terrible. Like it took ages to load.
Yeah, and so we
So that
ended
was a
up
big,
moving away
Go
from it,
ahead.
yeah.
Yeah, so we've moved to tabletop.to or TTT as we call it. And what was nice is that the Australian community on TTS put me in touch with the owner of the site, and we got to chatting. And I said, "Look, he had an MCP module in there for the platform, but it was based off the Crisis event, which doesn't really measure things in a for competitive purposes very well." And so he very kindly put together another module on the platform that conformed to the way we wanted to run our stuff on Tabletop Simulator. And so now we have a robust system to do pairings and also do changes to the pairings and then measure strength of schedule and control points or
It's
victory
a
points.
much more functional tool than Challenge ever was, and big props to the developers because they came in clutch. We're going to be using it for the foreseeable future. Very happy with it. The final lesson I want to bring up, and I think this has already been pretty publicly talked about, but we are going to have a standalone Australian bracket going forwards. It sounds like so. The reasoning for this was like, I think we originally tried with having Australia being its own region, in season one, if I recall. I was in the Discord for like a couple of weeks, so my memory's a bit hazy. But at that point, we only had like four Australian players, so they'd all play each other and then be like, okay, what now? So then we decided to fold them into the pre-existing brackets so that they could more easily have a higher variety of opponents, but that put on scheduling pressure. And now the Australian contingent is of such a healthy population that the downside of them only playing each other is not nearly what it used to be. So I think it was just an obvious move with the current growth and health of the Discord in general.
And we're still, I mean, the point is we're not calling them on purpose, not calling these brackets by countries, because we want people to feel free to join anyone that they want to suit their schedule. Because if you're a shift worker, you work nights, another bracket might be better for you. So a lot, some of the Australians actually did have that issue, and so they were very happy to be in like the central one, I think it was, or west.
Yeah, some in central, some in west, because those are only 2 hours apart.
But yeah, so we're opening the OC, we call it an Oceania, because, and we're doing that on purpose because we want to invite the, there's a Far Eastern country community growing, certainly in Malaysia and
Oh,
Philippines.
interesting.
Oh yeah, definitely. They have their own Facebook group, and I think they lurk in the Australian one as well. So I definitely keep inviting them to come play. So we think that there might be enough people to populate that. And shout out to our new admin, tournament admin, AJ, Abby. She is in Australia and doing a great job growing that community down there and helping us on TTS.
Yeah, I'm super excited by her addition. It adds a clear Australian voice into the admin process. Because I think there was some mild frustration with season three for Australians, for like not having their own group and stuff. And I think that was just kind of showing that there was enough pain that we needed to go back to making a dedicated Oceania bracket. But now we essentially have somebody on the inside giving direct feedback for the Australian population, which I'm all for.
That's what you need. You need somebody with their ear to the ground. I learned that lesson in the WTC. It makes a huge difference.
Are there any other important lessons we learned off of season three?
We learned to standardize what release model release dates were because we had a late edition just as we went into the elimination rounds, which wasn't ideal how that worked out. You want to talk about it?
On the eve of the top 16 list submission, Criminal Syndicate came out. And essentially there was some debate as to whether or not we were going to allow it, and we ultimately did allow it with like 24 hours heads up, which was admittedly a bit
But
of a
the reason it
scramble.
was, yeah, and the reason it was a debate though is that they were only out in the United States. And before we've been trying to only play with models that were available everywhere in the world, but quickly found out with Asmodee and the pandemic, they couldn't coordinate things well enough across the world.
Typically we had a policy where models had to be in like at least two of the three of Australia, Europe, and NA is I think what we were previously targeting. But I think we realized that that was just kind of an untenable position. And so as long as it's street legal somewhere, I think is going to be the rule of thumb going forwards.
No, actually it's more specific. We're going to do it's
Or,
strictly
oh.
United States releases now. Every second Friday, because
Okay.
they've seemed to, and the reason we did that is because it seems to have gotten very regular, and that's what we want is regularity. Every second Friday of the month, it seems like the US gets a release, and so that's what we're using.
Okay, yeah, that sounds more right. I thought it was just as long as it's any of them, but US sounds the most reasonable just because that release date is probably gonna be the one that pisses AMG off the least.
Yeah, probably. And the other real, the positive thing that we learned, I thought that the side tournament, the Beta Splendens league that we ran alongside the elimination rounds for everybody else, I thought that was a surprise hit for everybody.
Yeah, I liked how it was more relaxed than the last chance from season two. Which was very competitive. I think only 16 people played in that. But it was essentially the competitive people who didn't make the cut, or me, who showed up too late to season two and just decided to play in that for shits and giggles.
Right.
But I think the Beta Splendids League was a lot more approachable to the people who went like 3-3 or worse. Just a lot looser. There's no stakes. It's just there to get games in. Kind of the
But I think they like the challenge. If you recall, we didn't do it a straight tournament. We actually specified crises around themes for each of the 4 weeks. And I think people really dug that challenge as a change of pace.
Yeah. So no list lock, set crises. You decide Pryo in the match and brought a team for it, if I recall. Yeah. Pryo was not decided, right?
No.
They're not Pryo. Everything was the same. Threat value was not decided, right?
No. No. It was based off, you had a limit, you had three different crisis secures and three different crisis extracts that you had to choose from, but it's just as if you had brought those three. After that, everything was normal. Like, so you roll the priority and you discard one of those cards that you've picked, you know, if you pick secures, let's say, and stuff like that. So in a sense, threat values were prescribed.
They were limited. You only had to prepare for six at max.
And that's what I think people liked. So it was a lot of fun. I think we're going to do that again. I have a different format in mind to try out. I think the next one, instead of doing, we did wide, narrow, slow, and fast last time for the 4 weeks, one for each week. I didn't float this by you yet, but I was thinking about doing one where it was high threat value, low threat value, terrain dense tables, and terrain light tables for the 4 weeks.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm always fine to get looser in these more casual events because, like, unless it's very obviously going to lead to a negative play experience.
Sure.
Like if we created Hired Muscle Week, where you're forced to play Spider Infected or Panic, Grip City's evacuation efforts continue, I think that would be like a bit much. But I think those are perfectly fine axes to push. Because who cares if it's imbalanced? Everyone's coming into the same imbalance.
Yeah. And the way I see it is I like to force it to a certain degree just so that people can have that experience and try to design around it. And I hope then take something away from it that they'll use in their competitive tournament building.
Yeah. Anything else we want to cover on this before talking about Mutant Fall?
Nope, that was a big one for me. Thanks.
Okay. So Mutant Fall, that's currently ongoing. The kind of casual league to bridge us between Season 3 and Season 4, because we didn't really have a good time to fit 10 weeks of a like proper competitive league in with the holidays.
Right.
How have you been enjoying that so far, out of curiosity?
Well, you know, again, I feel like we're in a very experimental mode at the beginning of this game's maturity and also TTS's community maturity. And so, as you know, Mark, we have been, another thing that we've been trying to do more of is to be very receptive to the community's desires. And so, you know, that we've run more than one survey at different stages with the community and have gotten decent feedback from people, which, you know, a number of responses so that we could make some decisions. So we did that at the end of the season three about a number of things. And one of the things we heard loudest is that people did want to try a more casual narrative type of league, in particular because the mutants were about to drop. And so people were excited about them. So, you know, we took that feedback on board. Again, we're trying to be receptive. And at the same time, it was an experiment. We're like, okay, let's put together a full-on narrative event. Nothing silly. It should still be close to a competitive game. Not competitive in the sense it's like you're competing with one another, but rather it's not silly, too silly. I don't know how to say it. And see how that, what kind of reaction we get from the community on that and how much fun it's been. As a result. And like you said, it fits in the time that we had available perfectly.
Yeah. I'm very interested to see the results from the Mutant Fall League when we do a poll eventually.
Yeah, me too. We got about half the number of people signed up than last time. So, than the competitive league. So we lost half the people. The games are getting played. I am keeping up. There's a narrative event to it. The idea is that it's supposed to be pitting the X-Men versus the Brotherhood versus everybody else who's afraid of this new type of superhero that's come onto the scene. You know, yep. Kind of like the, you know, the general reaction that people have to something on the unknown. And so the idea is to who can actually manipulate these three factions to try to come out as the world leader with the most power. And so the idea was to balance the three factions. So if any one of them started to win a lot of games, they suddenly get a disadvantage put on them, namely being called a bounty put on their heads for that the next coming week. And that way they play at a disadvantage. And so hopefully people could start. The idea, if you metagamed it, is that people could start playing. They could play whatever faction they wanted each week. So they could start metagaming it to try to gain as many points as they could at the expense of various factions and so forth. That was kind of like the meta idea of it.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see how it shakes out because it creates tangible impacts on the game. So like the previous league where we talked about like the specified crises, it's like how do you refit yourself to play the game in this shape? But it's a shape you would see normally in the game. But with the bounty system where it actually affects the number of tactics cards you can take, it's actually doing something that like isn't possible inside the normal game. So it'll be interesting to see how people respond to that.
Me too, because it will definitely inform whether we do these sorts of things going forward. We have to be quite judicious with what we're going to plan for 2021 because the competitive leagues are definitely popular. We know this, but they also take a lot of time.
Yeah,
you know, they're 10 weeks, as you mentioned. So we have to be careful about how we plan those out for the year and, you know, don't want to plan in narrative events if there really isn't an audience for it, you know. But we do want, and this is what I say at the beginning of the podcast, we're not just about competitive. I mean, one of the things that I admired about the guys running this in the first place when I came on board was that they had a very clear mission. One is to make this as much as the real life experience as possible, which is in part the way the mod is designed. And secondly, they wanted to make sure that we didn't exclude casuals at the expense of the hyper-competitive people and try to mix the two. And I think we struck that balance with the normal competitive leagues. But if there is really a big casual element of people playing this game and we need more narrative events as a result, we want to explore that and have the results. And not just have people say it, because people will say a lot of things, you know, but then never get around to doing them or, you know, being part of them. So, you know, that's why we do these experiments. We look at the results. We look at the people coming, you know, and the number of people coming. We'll do a survey and people, you know, need to demonstrate to us really that this is something that's viable because we like have limited resources. And so we don't want to do stuff that's just not viable.
Yeah. A big part of what we're trying to do is iterate and build the community. And again, I think you hit the nail on the head to try and serve everybody here. Cause I come from War Machine, which has a bit of a problem where it's like borderline impossible to onboard new players. There is a huge complexity gap, and it is so easy to snap the neck of a newbie in War Machine because you can automatically win if you kill their Warcaster or Warlock. Setting up assassination runs is like second nature to somebody who like plays the game competitively. And so you get in this weird world where new players and veterans are playing a totally different game, and it's very likely to make new players quit. And so I want to do anything in my power to create a healthy path to onboard newer players with casual and narrative stuff that maybe they eventually want to try out tournament stuff. But even if they don't, they're still there, part of the community, making it larger, making it so more people come in, and maybe some of those will be tournament hardcore people like me.
Right. That's it. More bodies is more good.
Yep. And being able to grab different people who are drawn by different parts just makes the whole thing overall healthier, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so if you want to see more casual or narrative stuff in MCP, play in the casual narrative leagues on the Tabletop Simulator Discord. Between the polls and participation numbers, if we see good numbers for that, we'll keep on putting more time into casual narrative leagues. It's that simple.
Yeah. Yep. Well said.
But so I think that takes us to our final event that we've run up to this point that we can discuss, and that would be the single day tournament, which all time blends together in COVID, but I think that happened on the 20th. Does that sound right?
I think it was the 20th.
Or sorry,
Hang
the
on a
weekend of
second.
the 20th, the 21st. Yeah, it would have been the 21st.
That's it, the 21st. Yes.
And so this is something that I wanted to try for a little while, under the thesis that 10-week leagues are a huge commitment, and I think there's a lot of people who don't want to commit to being in a league for 6 to 10 weeks, depending on how you play. And so we decided to put together single day tournaments where you're guaranteed to play exactly 3 rounds. And so essentially you're in 8-player pods that fire off kind of like Friday Night Magic.
Yes. I mean,
And
essentially, again, it's us trying to bring the real life experience to the digital realm. You know, we were just trying to say we're running a tournament like you'd have at your shop.
block out a day, 9 hours in our case, because we're doing 2-hour rounds with 1-hour breaks, just so that people are flexible.
Right.
And we had pretty good participation. I think we had either 36 or 40 people play, because we had 5 pods up and one of them was half sized.
Yeah, we had you guys. The central group had 2 pods of 8, so 16 people. We had 18 altogether, so 34 altogether.
And unfortunately, I would have played, but so the West bracket failed to fire off a pod. We only got 4 or 5 people, I think.
I think it was only 3, because if you had 4, you could have done round robin at least.
Yeah, that's fair. So it must have been 3 people then.
Yeah, it was a real shame.
But so then some people moved to the central bracket, but we were starting at a 9 a.m. start time, and 9 a.m. central is 7 a.m. west. And I'm
Yes.
not about waking up at 7 a.m.
Yeah, it's not for everybody.
but so I'm trying to, so I guess this is a sneak peek into our next topic, slash what we talked about at the beginning, but we're going to be doing another one of these on the 19th, which is going to be a little bit over 2 weeks from when this airs. I'm going to try and get this out the day of recording, which would be the 1st of December. So you have 18 days to prepare for the next single day tournament. You just sign up, and as long as we get 8 people in your time zone, we'll fire off the event.
We're doing it differently, actually, because this
Oh.
was the one of the few lessons
Yeah,
that we learned.
yes. We're doing it as one big bracket now instead of 8-player pods. So why don't you talk us through
Correct.
that difference? Because I think this was a big learning point from a TO's perspective that isn't necessarily visible to the player.
The first thing I want to mention, Mark, was how amazingly successful, beyond our dreams, the one-day tournament turned out to be. There was a lot of trepidation about it, mostly because of the screen time. You know, are people willing to? Because some people would say to me right away, "Oh, I can't commit all day to playing." I'm like, "Well, wait a minute. If you go to any kind of store tournament, you're committing the day. So that is not a starter argument for me, right?
Yeah.
You, if you can, you know, set aside time to go to a store and play games, you could do the same amount of time for this. It's the same thing. What I did concern myself about is it's not the same as real life. You're staring at the screen for that long, and so that was the concern. And the way we mitigated that is that we said it was only going to be 3 rounds, and that's why I went with the 8-person pods. So that's the first thing, limited the overall amount of time. Second, we insisted the games would only run for 2 hours, and we had rules about what would happen if time ran out. And we did those 2 hours within a 3-hour window. That way people, you know, could fudge a little bit when they got started, but more importantly, you could have a bigger break in between the rounds before getting started the next one. And it turned out that was perfect. People loved it, either because they were resting their eyes, walking around, or they actually could attend to things at home with their families or have a bite to eat. You know what I mean? They had that flexibility. And the 2-hour time limit, very few people pushed it up against it. You know, in other words, it didn't go to time. And those that did recognized, you know, that it was on them. You know, and it wasn't a negative play experience to have to end the game. They recognized that it was on them. So I was super pleased by that. So the only difference was is that, you know, we wanted to do 8-person pods so that there'd be a clear winner of each pod. But from a TO perspective, is it extremely stressful to try to make that happen? Because you could, it happened to me. You have a full pod and you're great. So now do I fire a new one off? Okay, so what if I only get 3 or 4 people? What do they do with them? So we had one pod that went 4 people. I said, fine, we can't find any more players. Let's just make yours round robin. That way you can play 3 games with 3 different people. That was okay. But then one of the other pods, somebody drops, and I have an uneven number of people. Like, what do you do then? Or I had some that had 2 people drop. You know, now you're at a position where the game could, I mean, the tournament could conceivably be over after 2 rounds instead of 3, which kind of sucks. So it's while it's appealing to have the very clear result at the end of the tournament, it's just not conducive when organizing it. And even though it worked this time, because of the way the numbers fell out, it was very hard to make that happen and could easily fall apart. And so we are trying again. Even though the feedback was a little negative for this, we still want to try to experiment because that's the kind of phase of life we're in right now. And we're just doing a single pod for each time bracket. And we'll just do strength of schedule and the usual tie breaks to orient people after the 3 rounds and see how it goes.
Yeah, so I'm very much in favor of this because when I used to run events for War Machine, I would very typically have somewhere between 25 and 30 players. But it would be difficult to run a proper 5-round event in the time allotted. Because, like, there's 12 hours of open store time, 2 hours per round. That gives you 2 hours for inefficiency and a lunch break. That's assuming you want to be there from open to close. So I would very often do fixed 4-round events where prizing was purely if you went undefeated or if you only lost once. Those went over very well because then people didn't care about placing. They didn't get butt hurt by like weird SOS tiebreak stuff. It was just, I went 4-0 or I went 3-1. They would just talk about their performance like that. And I think that was a very healthy way. And I think from the TO side, this is just way cleaner to handle. As long as you have greater than 8 people in a single pod together, you're able to run 3 rounds, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to give it a go. But I think so for people to come, we really encourage people to give it a good try. We have very good experience now that people actually enjoyed it. They remarked at how enjoyable the day was and how relaxed it was, even though they were playing competitively, that it fit into their family schedules. It really did seem to work. So I encourage you to go to this URL. It's tinyurl.com/TTSTourney.
We'll put that up in the show notes as well.
Go there because it explains the rules, which are not very long, but more importantly, it has links to each of the brackets in tabletop.to where you can sign up, and it's very easy to sign up.
And if you aren't already on the Tabletop Simulator Discord, we will also have a link to join that. It's free to join. It's free to participate. What we did last time, if I recall, I didn't actually run any brackets, but I think we actually created channels specifically for the TOs to talk to the players at the start, kind of like if you've ever been to a steamroller or a tournament. Very typically, the judge will gather everyone, go over some quick notes, and then get started. So I think we got the feel integrated kind of nicely that way.
Yes. We called them lounges. They were voice lounges. And it was really nice. We had about half the people showing up one time or another. And it was just like in real life. People would talk about their games. They talk about how things went, how much they were enjoying things. They just introduced each other to find out where they were from. It was really remarkable how well it worked. So I'm really looking, and that's what drove us to do one in December, honestly. You know?
Yeah. So I guess should we talk about the elephant in the room for the Santa Claus Clash?
Yes. Let's get spicy.
So for those of you who may or may not have been paying attention to the game recently, there is a certain tactics card called Hired Muscle. And it allows you to move citizen tokens, which are spider-infected, the evacuees in Panic Grip City, the citizens in Find the Scroll, I forget the actual name of it, and then the safe houses in Mayor Fisk vows to find missing witnesses. And the important thing is on either Spider Infected or Panic Grip City, you're able to get a 3-to-1 or a 4-to-1 advantage on the extracts without rolling any dice. At least in the first single day tournament, we saw numbers where people, when you exclude mirror matches, it was an 80%+ win rate. With those, which is admittedly
Without having to do
very
any
concerning.
combat.
So
Yeah.
we're kind of taking this opportunity to look at the health of Hired Muscle during the Santa Claus Clash. If it was just an outlier, it will be just an outlier. If it was a persistent problem, we're going to be taking a serious look at it. Because AMG has said that they're going to update their banned and restricted list quarterly, but there's a very real world where our season 4 league would start before any banned and restricted update. So even if they did update this, it would be entirely possible we would have to play 3 weeks with Hired Muscle. And if it's like an 80%+ win rate thing, I think that's going to be very unhealthy for our league. And so we're going to
So we're
be
not trying to
taking.
do anything.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I say we're not doing anything hasty at this stage. We're taking a very, measured look at it, all the tournament organizers on Discord. But this tournament will be instrumental in helping us make some decisions. So we hope people come and play to the game. We're here to have game played as it is prescribed right now. So feel free to bring it. Don't feel bad about it. If you know how to beat it, bring those lists, rosters too, because it's very likely people are going to have Hired Muscle there.
Yeah, this is definitely trying to be a referendum to see if it's bad enough to see us getting out of lockstep with AMG.
That's it.
Because
Which
I think I speak for
we're
all
not
the
in.
admins when we're super loath to make a custom ban list of any sort.
Exactly.
We would
Yeah,
not be
that's what I was
considering
going to say
this
too.
if the numbers were not this extreme.
Yeah. And the fact that you don't have to do any combat. You
Yes, no dice
literally just
involved.
walk. There's no dice. You just run away.
But
So
yeah,
we'll see.
so I yeah, I think everybody should treat this whole Hired Muscle situation as a one-off, even if we do end up making a supplemental ban. We don't want to do this, and it would only be if we were seeing serious numbers in the Santa Claus Clash.
Yeah. Cool. So it's even more excitement.
Yeah. So I guess looking forwards, season 4 team events. We kind of already talked about potentially banning Hired Muscle for season 4, but do we have anything we can talk about on season 4 right now?
Season 4, we plan on opening up signups on the 3rd of January. So it's a Sunday, basically after New Year's. Have games kicking off the Monday after, not the next day, but the week after that. Monday is when we usually we do the pairings the Sunday, and then the first games are Monday. So what does that mean? I'm not talking very sensibly. So signups happen on January 3rd, with the idea of pairings going up late on the 10th, so that you start playing your games January 11th, and that'll be the full-on 10-week process. And as I mentioned, we'll do the beta splendens again, and if unless something changes, I'll probably plan it out to have those kind of challenges, a weekly challenge, and how you have to design your roster.
Yeah, and something I want to clarify here, just because I think there's been a couple of conflicting statements, at least on my part. I think in the early stages of post-season 3, we were seriously considering making season 4 a team tournament. I do not believe that we are current. I think we're going to be going back to something very similar to season 3, where it's standard individual play. Team tournament is still coming. It's still on the horizon. We're still nailing down the format, and I think there hasn't been a lot of discussion about this, but after seeing how well the single day events have popped off, I think that we might start with a single day team event as opposed to a full on league.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, we could do it like that. Sure.
Because one of the biggest logistical hurdles we've been working out kinks with the format is that, like, let's say you're doing a league, not only do you have to schedule with your opponent, but you have to schedule your draft between the two captains before any of the players can right. actually schedule matches. And so if it's a single day event where everybody's in the same place at the same time, I think that kind of sidesteps that issue and lets us test the format independently of league logistics. So I think it's more likely that you see it as a one-day event, late quarter one or early quarter two.
Yeah.
Rather than a proper league the way we've been doing.
Yeah.
And then
I mean,
we'll
we're settled on it being.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're settled on it being three-person teams. We're going to stick to that. What we're working through right now is how to do the pairings process, because that is an integral part of the challenge when it at least comes to War Machine WTC, which is similar. So that we're trying to work through that, as you just said, Mark, and how to schedule it. I mean, we actually have a system. There's a real-life system that works fantastic. It's the German-style three-person War Machine tournaments. Guild Ball uses the same one. They yep. adopted it from the War Machine community. It works great. The question is can it work as well digitally? How do we do it digitally? Or else do we have to find something else? And then the other thing that we're actually, it's good to have extra some time to pass before we do this is to figure out how do we... The thing that made War Machine WTC work so well in one aspect is we made it feel like an actual team event where the players on a team had to cooperate with one another to develop a team-oriented approach to their lists, army lists, yeah. but didn't go so far as to change the fundamentals of the game by making those rules. That's what made it such a great format. So you felt like you were in a team endeavor, but it was still playing War Machine pretty solidly. And so we're trying to capture that magic here at MCP and how to do that with the state of the game, you know, being so new still. How do we do that is a big, serious discussion right now.
Yeah, so a large part of that is on team list building restrictions. We're fiddling with a few different methods. The first one is just no repeats of any cards, full stop. We're a little bit trepidatious about crisis cards at this point doing that, because there are exactly 9 of each, which means you would have to have all 18 crises represented across your team currently.
Right.
And that might cause some weird behaviors that
are not fun, basically,
yeah,
or really kind of just not making a normal game. Yeah.
And it also puts weird pressure on certain splash characters, like Valkyrie. She's very valuable in both Asgard and Defenders. If you have an Asgard team and a Defenders team, who gets her? And maybe that's an interesting question that actually enhances the team building experience, but it could also lead to enough restrictions and kind of fighting over pieces that it could detract from the format.
Exactly.
And then the other method we're looking at is a little bit looser, where essentially there's no duplicate affiliation. So once somebody has an affiliation, nobody can take the leader for that affiliation except for them. And some other similar restrictions in their list.
We were actually debating that a little bit. We were saying that each player would have to declare which affiliations or one that they were going to play. But you, let's say you want a Captain America and a Defenders list, you could do that. That's fine. But that player
you can never
who's playing
actually
Defenders,
claim as the leader. Yeah.
Right. So it's, you know, it's these nuances that we start now have to tinker with again to try to make it an interconnected team. But when you start tinkering with the rules too much, does it really change the character of the game to the point where it's not recognizable as an MCP game? And we don't want that.
Yeah, and so we're going to continue tinkering on these throughout the end of the year, towards the beginning of the year. And so I would expect sometime after season four launches, in early mid-January, I think you'll start hearing more talk about what the format has been solidified to.
Yep.
So I guess keep an ear out for that. I'll try and post information to the Roster Doctor Facebook and on acrossthebifrost.com as we have more news on that.
Yeah, we could blog it as well on your new blog.
Blog it, baby.
So,
anything else
last
we
big
want
thought.
to talk about on future stuff we're looking at? I think we've covered most of the
Just,
projects.
I think the big one, though, that kind of affects lots of different events that we're playing is instituting some sort of clock to the game. Dun, 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 dun.
So whether it be round timers, whether it be death clock, we're looking at instituting timers. And part of this is on Tabletop Simulator, for the finals. I think there was a literal 5-hour game for season
Yes.
three, and
Yes.
I think either both of the players were reasonably fine with it. But I think we definitely want to give players the ability to complete this game in under 2 hours, because the quote unquote tournament standard set by AMG is 90-minute rounds, right?
Right.
And Tabletop Simulator might be a bit faster, might be a bit slower, but I think we should be able to achieve 120-minute games very reliably. And so adding a tool to help with that, either a round timer or instituting a culture of chess clocks, like in War Machine and Guild Ball, could be very beneficial. Making it so that people who can only find enough time to play one game on a weeknight now can all of a sudden play two,
Yeah.
because they know their games are never
Yeah,
going to
and
take more than 2 hours.
yeah, I want to try to. I know there's going to be a lot of people upset about this because they come from different backgrounds. Especially you hear the word chess clock and they immediately get triggered by it. And I can understand that. All right. I don't want to dissuade people from expressing that, but just hear us out a little bit. We have a couple of points to make about why this may be a good thing. Number one, this isn't just about competition. We're not trying to force people to play fast to demonstrate some sort of competitive skill of the game. That's not the purpose of it. In fact, it's quite the contrary. I think a lot of the admins were looking at it from the point of view of, I'm a casual player. I'm really not keen on having to play a game for 3, 3.5 hours on a particular night, because it's just a huge commitment. Or worse, I don't know how long to schedule my gaming time in between my family stuff because I don't know how long the game's going to last. And that's my biggest one is that I've had games legitimately go for 3, 3.5 hours on more than one occasion. So
Same.
it's not a isolated thing. And you had the same thing, right, Mark? So there's that's really the driver is we want to give people their lives some organ some you know way to kind of count on how much time they can put aside for the game. Or else get more games in if that's what they're like to do.
Yeah,
Then the
and
other thing,
as go ahead, go ahead.
No, finish, finish.
I was just going to say, as far as I know, the entire reason chess clocks were invented wasn't as a skill expression tool, but so that they could get chess tournaments to end on time. If anybody here listening has ever TO'd anything, you know finishing on time never happens. You are always late, and you are in a constant battle against your own players to get things to finish up in a timely manner. And chess
That's right.
clocks are purely there as an important tool to enforce time limits. So
Right.
I think it's I think building a healthy culture around just saying, I need to be able to finish this in a reasonable amount of time. We don't have to call it a loss. And if it's really close and we're almost finished, yeah, sure, we can go off like overclock and just finish it out. But I think we should be all using it as a tool to get us all to play at a certain pace.
That's right. And we have, and this is where I was going to go next, is we have demonstrable proof that it isn't such a awful experience. So number one, in my real life events, we've been finding that the comfortable game time was about 1 hour and 45 minutes. People settled on it. We had more time and people didn't need it. We didn't feel that 90 was reasonable though either. So from after three events or so of live events, a sizable number of people, like 14 players each time, we settled on 1 hour and 45 minutes as being reasonable. So there's that. Then we know for sure that during the one-day tournament where we had 32, 34 people playing, 2 hours was way perfect. Everybody said they either got finished just about on time, or if it went to time, they realized it was kind of on them why it went so long, and they could. And then we had very clear rules about how to score the game when time ran out. So nobody felt upset about that time at all. And so we're looking, you know, the goal would be to do a two-hour game clock. So again, not a round, like not a chess clock thing. You know, we felt that that would be a little too competitive and also a little messier in MCP, although I've done experiments with some friends playing with chess clocks, and it isn't as hard to do as you'd first think, as it turns out. But we're just doing game times. And for the next league, we're probably going to ease people into it. So we're giving people a 2.5 hour
clock
that they should be playing to, with the idea, if it's going well, to go down to two. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to corroborate. I think giving a healthy little buffer to start is very much a good idea.
Yeah, because we understand that this is new to people. A lot of people are very much against clocks because of some bad negative experiences they had in the past. We get that. But as you just very eloquently stated before, there's a lot of practical reasons about wanting to do this that have nothing to do with competitiveness, that we feel like we want to try to at least experiment with that and see. I wish people, they trust us enough based on our track record to at least try it with an open mind. It'll be only for 3 weeks at most, you know, the first half of the league part of the season four at a minimum, that they'd have to kind of endure it. And if it was really that horrible and we got that much negative feedback, we could do something about it. But I think people would be really pleasantly surprised if they just give it a go.
Yeah. And again, like if there's a super negative reaction from the community and it's not fixing the problem and it's causing pain points, we'll obviously walk that back. But I think it's going to be just a step forwards to a better pickup game in culture in general. Because most of the time I can only get in one game in a night, and I want to be able to get to the two game in a night status, which is what I was doing very reliably with War Machine, where I'd leave work at about 5:30, I would get to the store at about 6:30, and that's 3.5 hours. Technically, War Machine games are supposed to take 2 hours on full chess clock, but you'd very rarely play nail biters, so you would just play two, wrap up by 10, go home, right? And I want a similar experience at MCP. I want to be able to wrap up with work, start a game at around 6, finish before 8, start another one, and be like, I had a good day. I got two games in. And I think that's going to be a big step forwards for the entire LFG channel looking for game on the Tabletop Simulator Discord.
Cool. Yeah. So I think as a summary of this episode, look at what we've come in just since COVID, March, I guess. it's amazing how mature the game is for how young a game it is and how young the community is. And we've got really solid foundations to go forward as well. So it has never been a more exciting time. Anybody who's listening to this and feels a little odd about playing still online, I really encourage you to try it and just take the plunge. And I think you'll be very, very surprised at how enjoyable it can be. Real life, it will never be the same as real life. Absolutely something that we're still looking forward to getting back to. There's even a painting league now that we have as well.
Oh, I forgot everything. To even mention that. Yeah.
Yeah. So good old Abby. Abby took that on as a admin, which is kudos to her. So we're really trying to make this as much as the real life experience as possible. And I think it's helping to grow the game. I think it's helping mature the organized experience around the game. And even when we go back to real life, I think then it's a nice thing to still have in the background if you're looking to get games when you can't travel for whatever reason.
Yeah, and something I think we've been saying in a lot of different ways over the course of this discussion, that I just want to explicitly bring home is that we are, as admitting events for the Tabletop Simulator Discord, I mean, we're obviously just two voices out of the dozen or so that work behind the scenes on making these events. But I think that we are very much an iterative team. And what that means is that we're constantly looking for little tweaks we can do to change and improve. We're looking to learn from our mistakes on past leagues and make sure that every time we run a new event, it's better than the last event. So even if you're a little bit trepidatious about some of the things we've talked about that we might be trying in the future, if they don't go over well, we'll throw them away because we're looking to improve things. It's not like this is the direction we want to take things in. It's we think that this might be a positive direction to take things in. Let's try it and see.
Right.
So we're always looking for new ways to take that next step forwards. If you have suggestions on kinds of events or community functions that you would like to see, go ahead and reach out to us. We're very public on the Tabletop Simulator Discord. You can tag us anytime. You can grab me anytime on any of the Roster Doctor social media. Message me publicly or privately. I also go by GD Nerd on most of the Discords. GD Nerd or Roster Doctor at this point. Feel free to grab me. If you want a demo game, if you haven't played MCP on Tabletop Simulator yet and you want to take the plunge, go ahead and grab me anytime outside of business hours, Pacific Standard Time, weeknights or weekends. I'm fine.
Yes. And in fact, if you've had Tabletop Simulator experience with other games, like other mods in the past, do not carry over those assumptions into this mod. Careless Llama and Versens, the producer, I'm not sure who else, this mod is so smooth and so slick, it is remarkable how easy and it is to play on it.
Hell, there's even a streamer UI so that you can show the game to other people with a nice descriptive HUD. Like, everything's scripted from, like, movement to the cleanup phase. And it's, like, constantly improving every day whenever Llama or the other guys put in work. So,
yeah.
Give it a go. It's not as bad as, like, your average Tabletop Simulator fare. There's a lot of scripting going on to make this the smoothest experience possible.
Yeah. It's amazing. In fact, when we started playing live after a few months playing TTS, I got to the table and I was like, oh.
How do I rotate it?
The computer would just do all this. Yeah. How do I see? Why do I?
So I've legitimately looked into this. I think I'm going to get two pieces of plywood and get a Lazy Susan joint and just put them together so that you can actually rotate the board without like moving it.
Yeah, that'd be crazy, but good.
Okay, well, I think that's awesome. Gonna wrap us up for here, unless you've got anything else you want to say.
No, I hope people enjoyed this and got excited to join us on Tabletop Simulator, and I hope to see you at a real life tournament or convention very, very soon.
Yep, Santa Claus Clash on the 19th. We'll have the URL for the rules packet and how to join the Discord in the description wherever we post this. Is there anything else you want to plug personally before we say goodbye, Norbert?
No, I hope everybody has a nice holiday season and can relax a little bit, and that we have a very brighter 2021 coming forward.
Yep. So from all of us here at Roster Doctor to all of you out there listening, have a good evening. Bye-bye.